Don't die wondering. That's Laura Siddall's motto. And it's a phrase you can see applied to so much of her life as a pro triathlete. Laura now is a hugely successful British triathlete, but her path into pro sport came relatively late in life. While sport was always important growing up, she would go on to do a degree in mechanical engineering before taking a gap year as an officer in the British Army. She would then go on to work in the corporate world and move to Sydney in Australia back in 2007 on a two-year assignment. Then came triathlon, a sport she tried out a year after moving to Australia and with great success. After progressing from a rookie to securing four amateur world champion titles, she took the plunge in 2013 and decided to become a pro, going full-time in 2014 and moving to San Francisco to chase the dream. She is now a four-time Ironman champion, which includes winning Ironman Australia for three consecutive years, Ironman New Zealand, and also becoming the ETU European Long Distance Champion in 2018. These days, as she marks 10 years as a professional, she is based primarily in Boulder in the USA, where she is coached by fellow Brit Julie Dibbins. But the recent past has brought her significant hurdles. Most notably, last year, Laura was hit by a car during the bike leg at Ironman Brazil. It knocked her unconscious and left her with a slight brain bleed and concussion. The journey back has been a battle of the mind, just as much as it has been physically. And there have been questions about where her journey goes from here. But that phrase, "don't die wondering," is still present in her decision making. As also becomes clear in this podcast, Laura is a passionate advocate for women's sport and is both an athlete ambassador for the Women's Sport Trust, as well as being a member of their Unlocked program back in 2022. Quite simply, she is an inspiration to many, regardless of what your involvement is in sport. And perhaps we all need a little bit of that motto in our lives. Laura, a very warm welcome to the podcast. Thanks so much for taking some time to have a chat with us on this latest episode. How are things with you at the moment? I imagine quite busy right now.
Yeah, I mean, well, thank you very much for having me on. It's great to catch. And I know we said just before we started recording, apologies, because I know I've rescheduled a few times. So it's really great to actually finally catch up. Yeah, things are good. Pretty busy at the moment. Kind of in a big training block. I'm in Boulder, Colorado. My coach is based here, Julie Dibbins, and I've sort of been out here, based more out here for about a year now. But I head off next week to New Zealand to do a couple of races down in the Southern Hemisphere. So go and get some sunshine, get some warmth, I hope, and actually I used to live in New Zealand, so it used to be those races in February, March used to be kind of staples on my calendar, but I haven't been able to get back there since the pandemic. So yeah, quite excited to head back down for a few weeks down in the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah, will it feel a little bit like going home, so to speak? I know it's obviously been a while COVID and everything, but
yeah, I don't know. Someone else has said that. And actually, it's really nice. I posted that I was going down to do the races on social media, and so many people that I know from New Zealand are like, oh, we can't wait to see you again and have you back. It's, you know, welcome home and stuff like that. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing everybody. I spent about 4 or 5 years every summer or Southern Hemisphere summer in New Zealand. And then I actually left March 2020 just thinking I was going to be away for a 5-week training camp, and then the world shut down and I've not been back since. So what's that, 4 years later? And bless a good friend of mine, has all my stuff still sort of packed up in storage in her spare room, so it's going to be good to go back. And well, she's pretty happy that I'm going back to sort my shit out, I think. And I don't know. I think it's going to be quite weird. As I said, I've been in Boulder, Colorado, based here. I've been pretty nomadic my athletic career life. But I have been in Boulder, Colorado for about a year now, based more here, more permanently. And you know, I rent an apartment, and it was unfurnished when I rent it, so I've actually sort of had to finish it myself. And so it's the first time of not living in a foot at somebody else's furnished house, or somebody else's, you know, since, you know, early corporate days when I did have my own place and my own things, and I had money at a start, and then it went backwards from there. So yeah, I don't know if New Zealand's going to feel like going home, because I've kind of got my things here, but I'm certainly very excited to go back, and it has a very special place in my heart. So yeah, I can't wait to get back and see everybody, and yeah, just embrace the wonderful country that New Zealand is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we'll obviously circle through
Yeah.
your career and journey as this chat goes on. But I suppose while we're on the topic now, and obviously you've mentioned this life in Colorado that you now have, I mean, does that now feel like home or feel like it's becoming home? And maybe that's a nice part
Yeah.
of your life that you've kind of got settled now. Whereas, like you
I
said
think
before, it's a bit here, there, and everywhere.
that's the word. I think settled is the right word. Home for me, I would always say, is where my parents are and where my family is, which is the UK. Having said that, I've not lived there since 2007. So is that home? I don't know, but I guess I always sort of, yeah, default home to where parents and family are. But I think, yeah, there's an element of being settled. Like I said, I was sort of living in New Zealand. I would split my time summer to summer from the southern hemisphere to the northern hemisphere, and I was actually living in Spain. And then sort of during or after the pandemic, I was more permanently based in Spain. And that felt settled in one way, because I had my own apartment, I was in one place. But it was still rented, but it was rented furnished, you know, it was fully furnished, so it wasn't mine. I couldn't put my mark on it, so to speak. So I think that is the difference from being in Boulder. It's my things in here, and so there's a, yeah, element of being settled from that point. I'm also probably saying this to protect myself from when I go back to New Zealand and feeling, you know, having missed it for so long. And I really do love it down there, and as I did love with Spain, and there's great people in both locations. So yeah, it's a good, and it's one of those, I've been really lucky that I've lived in amazing places over my life, career, met some incredible people, been really spoiled from the places that I've had the opportunity to live. And yet at the same time, it's a not so much a negative, but a hard thing, because you do have parts of your heart in those different places, and it's hard to then feel like where is that settled point. Because I've lived in Sydney for 7 years, and I have fond memories of there. I love New Zealand, I love Spain, I'm now in Boulder. And so yeah, you kind of get torn in different places as well.
Yeah, and I think, like you say, settled, it's such a key part, I think, to people's lives, and you see it so often. And I remember interviewing Alex Yee, he of Triathlon World as well, back in my previous job, and he just moved into his house then, and just clocked that as just such a
Yeah.
major part of his life. So I think you can so often forget when you're watching sport or anything like that, the background stuff
Yeah.
that is so key going forwards as well. Rewinding the clock all the way back to kind of start the story, if you like, of your own personal journey into triathlon and growing up, represented what England in athletics and netball, I think, when you were younger. It's a question I commonly ask, but it can be quite deep, even though it's simple, but sport and its importance to you, and I suppose your identity growing up. Can you kind of sum up how important that was at that stage of your life?
Yeah, I've just always done sport, and I can't remember how. I'm the youngest of four girls. I know We weren't all sporty, I would definitely say that. I think well, that my sisters, maybe they might take offense to that. Like my eldest sister isn't, my second eldest sister, she played netball for England, was very good at sport, rowing and athletics as well. So I guess I followed in her footsteps a little bit. And my other sister at that stage, and I have to be careful here. At that stage, she did more alternative or minority sports. So as a female, she was doing karate and rugby, which, you know, now it's amazing to see that they aren't kind of the minority sports of women's sport anymore. They are big hitters, which is great. But she wasn't as sporty, I would say. So, but it's always been a huge part of my life. And yeah, I don't remember sort of not having sport as part of my life. And you know, now as I am nearing probably a retirement age of a career, it's quite scary to think actually what does sport look like going forward. Like I love the training and that feeling of being fit and active, and how do you then take that into your life going forward when things are going to change and it isn't necessarily your career? Or when you were growing up, it was so easy to have it as a hobby, and sport was always the hobby. I'm an age where, I mean, it's again fantastic that it's very different in the UK now, but for me growing up, it was all about, you know, you went to school, you did your GCSEs, your A levels, you went to university, you got a corporate job. And it was great if you did sport as a hobby because it gave you extra skills of teamwork skills or whatever other skills it, and it looked great on your resume to for an employer that you would, you know, had more than just the academic side of things. But then, you know, and I would never have dreamt that it would be now something I'm doing as a career. And that's just been an amazing opportunity I've had to like take that passion forward. But I think, excuse me, it was, yeah, just a real key part of me growing up, the, you know, and who I am today, and what I learned through playing the team sports and the individual sports. I think a lot of people use it as an escape as well, or as a break. You know, I went to a pretty academic school, and I guess I wouldn't say my parents ever put pressure on me, but there was probably pressure on through the school. And so sport was, yeah, a break from that, a difference. I would, you know, and I did sport outside of school. I think sport is a place where you can get away from the politics, the bullying, the bitchiness that goes on with kids going through school. And I think that's where it's super important as well for people, just, yeah, you know, mentally, physically. Yeah. But, and we talk about that a lot nowadays, how important sport is. But I think just as kids growing up, getting them out of the classroom, getting them active, you don't have to be the best in your class. You don't have to be, you know, it's funny. Sorry, as you'll find with me, I talk for a lot and then go off on random tangents. Like, you know, we're looking at getting people back into sport and being active, and let's say netball for an example, and you hear so many stories now, and a lot of it's probably off the back of the greater exposure that the England netball team have had, and other England sports, but let's say the netball. And you hear now these stories of people go starting to play again, and like, oh yeah, I've gone back and I've now joined a club. And you go, well, why did you stop? And it's like, well, I was never very good at sport at school. And I think we have this when we at school or at a younger age, like you only did sport if you were good at it. So there was this perception that you could only do it if you were good at it, and if you weren't any good at it, you didn't do it. Whereas it's like, no, we should be encouraging everyone to do sport just to be active and to be healthy physically and mentally. And if you're not in the first team, that is okay, but there should be an opportunity for you still to play or do sport, whatever sport that might be. Whereas it's interesting, like that perception is, well, I wasn't very good at sport, so I stopped. You know, I wasn't very good at sport at school, so I stopped. Whereas now, and people are coming back into sport, or they've started running again, or they've started cycling, and they don't care. And it doesn't matter what level you're at. And I think that's, yeah, it's a real shame where we kind of limit, or the perception is that you only carry on doing something when you're at school because you're good at it. And it's like, well, no, you don't, not everyone has to be going on to be first team or Olympic champion or even a professional athlete or whatever. It should just be, we should be, there's so many benefits and skills you get from sport which will help you in life. It's a big passion of mine.
Yeah, that, which I can wholeheartedly back, because similar situation, I did sport because it was that escapism, and I never thought I'd have a career in sport, inverted commas. I'm obviously not an athlete or anything, but I write a lot about it. And hearing you kind of describe that situation, and to me it's almost like the perfect embodiment of what, say, parkrun is now, where it is just this community driven weekly meet of people from all abilities and all walks of life who just want to go out and run 5k, regardless of whether you're an elite runner who's going to do it in 15 minutes or whether you're going to walk the whole thing. And just that mentality. And I suppose, similar to yourself, I've encountered quite a lot of people, be it in sport or outside of sport, who, because they haven't really seen that, how often do we use the phrase, you got to see it to be it, and see it to believe it?
Totally.
Any variation of that phrase is true. And it's the same with grassroots and things like that. And I suppose, kind of turning it back to your career, and you've mentioned going into the corporate world already, and I think there was a period where you went into the British Army as well before that. And I suppose was part of that journey, maybe looking for like that teamwork element that you've mentioned before with sport and things like that, but probably because you didn't realize that was actually an option for you going down the sport angle.
Yeah, I think so. Again, like, just classic phrase, you can't be what you can't see. And I think I was just of that generation just before the lottery funding came in, just before they started doing talent ID, which is, you know, people ask, actually, it's funny, people ask me, do you have any regrets in life? And I don't. I'm very open of that. I think, you know, I've got, you know, you are where you are with the doors that have opened. The only thing there's a couple that I do reflect on. One, so yeah, you mentioned I did a gap year in the British Army. I do often think, what would my life look like now if I'd have gone back into the army after my engineering degree? But I probably wouldn't be sitting here talking to you as a triathlete if that was the case. So, you know, I'm very grateful for where I am. And the other would be, I would have loved to have probably been a couple of years younger and to have been able to go through like the talent ID programs when they started bringing them in the UK, to kind of go, because I knew I was athletic and I knew I have physical capabilities, but I would have loved to have gone through like a testing center or process to say, actually, this is the sport that you would be great at. And so then fully go into that. Because I didn't actually, you know, yeah, like I said, I did sport, but it was at that stage, it was that era where it was the hobby, and it was very much, you did go through the corporate route. And it was only when I went to Australia with my corporate job and then started triathlon, be it very late in life, and sort of developed through from being a complete beginner, that people sort of started saying, oh, you should turn professional. And then that was getting that concept of what that was. But I think, I think probably searching, maybe that's what, like why I'm here, because searching for those elements that I got from sport growing up as a kid.
With the triathlon in particular, you said obviously being introduced to it when you were working in the corporate world and people telling you you're good, you should give it a go and keep progressing with it. It's one thing hearing that, but I suppose it's another thing completely kind of convincing yourself of that to a certain extent.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's a way you can describe like what was right about that, or what way was it that you managed to tell yourself, no, let's go for this?
Yeah, so I mean, I So I moved to Australia with my corporate job. I'm an engineer and worked for Shell, and it was just a 2-year assignment at the time. And when I was over in Australia, I was running at the time, and I tried to sort of find a similar running group. I had a fantastic group, running group in Manchester. And I tried to find a similar group in Australia and just couldn't. And then the mix of like, you're in a new place, you're wanting to meet friends, and it just wasn't right. Anyway, so through friends of works, and long story short, they suggested triathlon. And triathlon in Australia is like, it's what everyone's doing at the weekend. And you're in, obviously, in this amazing location, and you're by the, you know, Bondi Beach swimming and all of this. But I didn't start triathlon until I was 29. So technically, like most, well, and then I raced as an age group as an amateur alongside my corporate job for the next few years. And that's when I sort of started getting better and better. But it was still the hobby. But I did start winning some world championships as an amateur, as an age group athlete. And that's sort of when people started saying, you know, oh, you should, why don't you get your pro card? You should do this professionally. And I think it was only because I was in Australia and they have that, or they had at the time. And like I said, it has changed in the UK now, which is great. But Australia was several years ahead in terms of accepting sport as a career and as a profession. But it did take me a while to get my head around it because, you know, I didn't know what professional sport sort of looked like. And with triathlon, and, you know, at this stage, I was 34 years old. So in terms of turning professional, most professional athletes in sports are either retiring at that age or have already retired at that age. Again, we are seeing a change now, and age being just that number, another cliche, which is fantastic, and pushing our, you know, pushing the limits of the human body. But yeah, I was still, and there were various decisions to be made. I was sort of still racing over the shorter distance, so the sprint and Olympic type distance racing. But I was too old to be, well, to turn professional at those distances. I needed to be in like the British Triathlon Development Program, and that would be like gearing me up to the Olympics. And one, I wasn't a good enough swimmer. I'd never ridden sort of in a pack, and I wasn't a good enough runner. So I was fine on an age group and an amateur perspective, but competing at that distance on a professional level, I was just, there was no way I was going to do that. So it then was like, well, to do this professionally, I'm going to have to move up the distance to what's called a half iron distance, or a full iron distance, which, to be fair, was probably more suited to my physiology anyway, and probably knew that was where I was going to go. In terms of making that actual decision to step into the professional world, I had a great corporate job. I'd stayed in, you know, when my 2-year assignment with Shell had finished, they wanted to send me back to the UK. I wanted to stay in Australia. So I'd left Shell, and I'd then worked in management consultancy. And then I was working in another engineering firm, but sort of internal business consulting. I had a fantastic boss. She was super supportive of, again, the sport was a hobby, but a big part of my life. But I just was at a place where I wasn't 100% happy with the corporate job I was doing. And more of my headspace was thinking about like my next training session or my next race, or how can I do more training? How can I balance this with work, and et cetera, et cetera. And I just got to a point of going, one, yeah, I'm not getting any younger. And most people, you know, most, like I said, most athletes are retiring at this age, not about to start a professional career. Sport does tend to have a time limit on it, whereas the corporate world will always be there for me. It was that I don't want to look back in 5-10 years time and say, what if, and I never gave it a chance. And I think I reflected back on, as you said, I'd competed for England as a junior in athletics and sort of with England development for netball, but I never fully committed to it, again, because it was seen as the hobby. And so it was that kind of like, you if you don't do this now, you're still going to be sitting in the at a corporate desk in 10 years time and probably thinking that what if like this is a chance to go to follow sport, to follow a passion that you've always had, but you've never given it the full attention. So yeah, why not now? And it's kind of got to be now or never, because you're on that fine line of of being too old to start things. So yeah, and then it was a pretty rash decision of resigning from the corporate world, and I ended up moving from Australia to America then, initially to work with a coach, and then ended up back in New Zealand, Spain, as I said, and now back in the US with a different coach, but yeah, very happy now.
Yeah, don't die wandering springs to mind.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, for those who obviously aren't aware, that's very much your motto in a lot of this. And I don't know, that's not so much like the first time that motto really kind of sows its seeds in your mind, but I suppose there's a big thing to ask yourself, that like what do you want to do, what's your purpose, and yeah, getting that saying into your mind of you kind of don't want those regrets, and you like say now or never, and want to find out where this journey could actually take you. But that is a big question to ask yourself at that moment.
Oh, I'm still asking that question. I'm still asking what my purpose is and what my value. I think sport's very odd like that as well, because, you know, the pandemic was a classic. You know, if all the athletes disappeared from the world is still going to go on. Like, it's still going to survive. But if all the doctors and et cetera, if they all vanish, then we're going to be in trouble. So there is always, and maybe it's because I got into sport later and had that corporate career and in the army, like I've always, it's always a little bit of a struggle to kind of be like, what is your value and purpose as an athlete? And yeah, I mean, I still keep saying, even though I'm again a lot older now, it's like, you know, when I grow up, what am I actually, you know, I still get, this is probably the classic sort of generational things, you know, every now and again, I still get family, friends and things asking me, you know, when are you going to go back? When's the gap year over? When's your sabbatical ending? And I'm like, well, it's kind of been 10 years now. It's kind of a long-term gap year, this one. But it's interesting.
On kind of two things off the back of that. And I suppose the first is, like, does that nag away? Like that question is to...
Yeah.
I don't know, it's... I kind of would cite my dad maybe and be like, when are you going to get a real job type thing? And I don't know if you kind of have that. It's the inner monologue in your head, I suppose, asking yourself that question.
I think I do. And that may be because I didn't grow up as an athlete my whole life sort of thing. I had that corporate career and life very different. My mum and dad, my family have been incredibly supportive. I will say my dad's not so much when I think by the time I left the corporate world to be the athlete, they'd kind of got their head around it. I think when I left Shell initially, I think that was a big deal for them, because Shell is a massive multinational. You can pretty much, most people, and again, generations have changed, but that my generation and the generations before, you stayed with a company your whole life, and a company like Shell, you could have such a varied career, but you stayed with that one company. And, you know, my dad was the mining industry all his life, and my granddad was the mining industry all his life. So they came from that background. So I remember when I was leaving Shell to stay in Australia and albeit have another corporate job, I do remember, he probably won't remember this, but I do remember my dad saying, you know, but they have a good pension scheme. Like, what are you going to do? And to be fair, he is right. They have a very good pension scheme. And I now don't have a pension because I'm not in a corporate world of having a job or the finances. So that it's a little bit of a worry that now as I get older. But yeah, there is that nag still. Like, I know I'm incredibly lucky to be able to do and have done what I've done for the past 10 years. But do I often feel that I haven't achieved because I don't have that high-flying corporate job and the security of the money coming in. And yeah, people are, it's still, again, it's a generational thing of people are still kind of like, yeah, when are you getting the real job? When are you going to go back to that corporate world or, you know, settle down, be in one place? So yeah, it is, it niggles, I think, every now and again.
Yeah, and we're getting really deep conversation now, but just even when you think about, say, society's expectations of you or societal expectations of you, and almost conversations about people, there's so much chat about always planning for the future. And I don't know if it's some topics of discussion that in all that planning for the future, you mentioned pension scheme there as an example, or, you know, buying house, all that kind of stuff that you just consider as like society expects this of you almost. Yeah. But no one ever says about the now and like what living in the now and kind of, like I say, taking those opportunities when they present themselves. I don't know if you kind of feel that as well with kind of society's expectations, really. And it almost, I'd like to think we are, with whether it's online conversations or anything like that, kind of trying to break free of a bit of that putting in a box, if you like.
Yeah.
But I don't know whether you feel there's probably maybe still a bit of a way to go in that sense.
Yeah, I think so. I think things are changing. Maybe swinging the other way into this sort of instant fame, instant reward, you know, there's no attention span on anything and everything's got to be the here and now.
Yeah.
And maybe we're not planning enough for the future in certain respects. But yeah, I think there is again, generationally, probably I definitely sort of felt there was expectation or just stereotypes. And look, there's nothing wrong with it. That's just what everyone knew at the time. And so, you know, even when I was going through school, taking a gap year was like not really heard of. It was like, I think there were maybe two or three of us that did it. And it was very, that was kind of, whereas now I think that would be a much bigger, a lot more people take it. But a lot of people take gap years, career breaks throughout their corporate life. So again, there's that change in perception that actually that's seen as a good thing. It can add value. People, you know, putting, again, mental, physical health first rather than that corporate thing. I think, the conversation is changing, but I do think we have to find that balance, because now that living in the moment and taking the opportunity, and yeah, you only live once, is great, but at some point, and maybe the world and maybe society will evolve with that, but where does that money come from in future years? I mean, yes, we're all going to probably be working till we're a lot older, but then you get, you know, Elon Musk coming on and saying AI is going to take over the world and we're not going to need to work anymore, and it's like, oh yeah, but how do we then survive and live? And I think there's a balance between, and maybe it's my age of going, we do need to plan a little bit for what's happening 5, 10 years, 20, 30 years time, and being safe and secure. But yeah, we should make the most of living now and opportunities that present themselves. And yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, and the balance, like you say.
Yeah.
And I mean, even though I take a little snapshot from my own life and I see the web statistics or the web analytics for the website that I'm on, I see people on the story that I've poured a lot of time into, and it's an average time of like 10 seconds staying on that story. And that kind of sums up that instant need for stuff that you were talking about before. You kind of mentioned about asking yourself that ultimate question of purpose and anything along those lines, really. I don't know if you can sum up or whether you've got an idea in your mind about what drives you and what keeps you wanting more.
From From an athlete perspective, the driver to turn professional, I mean, obviously, for most, there are some sports which make a lot of money. For most of us, sport, the money is not the driver in sport. It's just not, they're not financially, you're not going to be making your millions. That is, again, that's changing. And there are those sports and those top athletes that do very well. But for me, the original driver was like, yeah, just never having fully committed to sport, and was to kind of like, I just want to see how good I can be if I fully commit to it and give everything. And I think that's probably what's, again, whilst money is not the driver, if you want to make this sustainable, like, you have to earn somehow. So to be able to carry on following your dream and your passion. So there is an element of that, but I think it's just the driver for me is just, if I can always see that there's areas of improvement and that are things I can still learn and get better, then I want to chase that. Like, as long as, touch wood, the body holds up and things like that, like, that's what I still want to do. I would say I am getting now, you know, I'm 43 now. Yeah, 43. And I had a crash last year. I was hit by a car last year. I can't remember anything about the crash and suffered a brain bleed. And I would say I came into last year off. 2022 was a really high. I had two fantastic results at World Championships. And I really, it really gave me a huge motivation as I got older, but going into, like, I'm still improving. I've still got areas to improve. I still feel I'm coming into, for me, what can be some of the best years of my life. I have a fantastic coach. She's amazing. And she's getting more out of me than I kind of thought was possible. And that's a real motivation when you see those improvements that you can still make. Then the crash happened and getting hit by the car. And it's definitely been a struggle post that. And that confidence or wavering of, actually, is this it? Am I at that tipping point now where actually just maintaining is what I'm going to be achieving rather than improving still? Or is this it? Am I just not going to be able to get back up? And the sport, and, you know, and the sport is moving forward as well. So there is a slight change, but whilst I still can fit, well, one, either I want to go out on my own terms or still feel there are areas where I can still learn, I can still improve. I mean, yeah, I've been a professional triathlete for 10 years. I've been doing sport for 42 years or whatever, 43 years. I have a lot of experience. And yet at the same time, I still feel so new, so young into the sport. There is so much to learn. There is so much to do. That kind of is probably the driver that keeps me going.
Yeah, and that crash, like you say, when you've come from such a high, I suppose, the year before, to having obviously something desperately awful like that happen, and it, again, it's so much easier said than done, but kind of, I suppose, resetting your mind and having that confidence again in yourself, is that probably been the hardest thing since that?
Yeah, I think so. You know, like, I actually saw a great post by Elise McColgan, who is a British distance runner and has had loads of injuries over her time. And she was saying, you know, when you're coming back from an injury or something, comparison is the thief of joy. And we so often compare ourselves back to what we were doing before. And like, why aren't we there? Or why can't we do that? Whereas we actually want, when you've had an injury or when you've had something like that happen, you're not going to be the same as before. And so you kind of have to just look on it at fresh eyes and just be like progression day by day of where you are. And, you know, I find that quite difficult as well, because I think, again, like I said, coming off the back of 22, going into the race in May in Brazil, looking back in hindsight, which is again another really easy thing, I was probably at the fittest I have ever been. Like, we had a really long build up into that race. I was putting really consistently good training down and was ready to do something special for me as an athlete. And I never got that opportunity because I got taken out by a car. You try not to have resentment and you try not to have frustrations and anger around that, because that's not healthy either. But there is a little bit of that, because that opportunity was taken away. And especially when you're at the later years of your career, you don't get those opportunities that, you know, you don't get that often again. And that has been that tipping point of like, will I ever get back to that again? And the confidence of, yeah, I, you know, again, as you get older as well, maybe your risk assessments change and your risk aversion changes. And so, you know, when I was younger, I wouldn't think anything about riding out on the roads. And I used to love riding in the wind or racing in the wind. And it would be like, yeah, the gnarlier the conditions, the better for me. And things like that. And I do, and even descending and doing cornering. And now, since that crash, there's a level of confidence, and with age that comes, of, you know, a mix of all of that together, of, you know, I get, I'm probably a bit more twitchy now if I hear a big truck coming behind me. And if the wind picks up, it starts to, like, you know, I get a bit, knocks my confidence a bit, and the descending again and things like that. So yeah, it's interesting how that kind of then affects, and then that gives you, you know, it's very easy to be driven, and it's very easy to have that drive and desire to do things when things are going well and when you can see the momentum and you can see the building. But when you are struggling with those bits, you know, when that confidence has been knocked, when that confidence has been taken away, it's a lot harder to get there. Often says the results are therefore then sweeter, though, because you know what you've been through to get back up there. But yeah.
Yeah. And I think that would be considered pretty natural for anybody in your position to say, have those thoughts. And you so often hear athletes talk about that flow state where it's just feels all natural. You don't really have to think about it. Where can you kind of sum up where you are now, whether that's, are you still kind of on this pathway to, whether it's progressing or just that step forward every single day at a time?
Yeah, good question. I think so, just about. I would definitely say since the accident in May, and then I had a really big focus to get, I was offered a wild card for the Ironman World Championships in Hawaii, which I was incredibly grateful for. And so that was a big kind of focus and drive to get back from the crash and to kind of, I guess, be able to, yeah, be back on a start line. But I have to say, since then, since the World Championships, it's been really tough to kind of work out. And I don't know whether that's still ongoing effects from the brain bleed and the brain injury, and like just fatigue levels are different, whether that's just getting older, whether that's being a 43-year-old female, and, you know, all of those things combined, has just, you do start to like be thinking kind of, am I still improving? Am I still getting better? Can I still get better? The sport is moving and changing so rapidly. Different race series are coming in, there's a lot more focus on the short distance, which is a lot of speed. Whereas, you know, and that's not my racing either. So yeah, I think I don't know. I mean, probably in a little bit of transition. There's still definitely some races I want to do. I definitely still love that feeling of being fit and in shape and in the best shape I can be. And I have to say, my coach, Julie Dibbins, does an incredible job at getting not just me, all the athletes she coaches, to their best level of fitness and performance for race day. And I think, you know, working with her the past few years, she's got me into, yeah, she's got me ready for races that I, you know, I never thought I would get to that place ever, really, let alone in the latter years of my career. So there's a mix, and then there's still that stubbornness of I want to control things and choose when the right time is. And again, the stubbornness of maybe not be willing to accept when maybe the improvement is slowing down or isn't quite going to be there again, and having maybe head in the sand a bit on that one.
The age old control, the controllable phrase,
yeah.
Which
yeah.
All of us, I think, learn the hard way at various stages of our life.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're the type of person who, obviously, with very early days into 2024, whether you are the type of person, whether it helps to have those aims or those targets, or if it is just better to take it as it comes without, I have to say, maybe an ambition, but not an outright target where if you don't meet it, say, it might have a detrimental effect.
Yeah. I think I flip, like, so half, I'm an engineer, so I have a very black and white brain. So from some respects, that target, that goals, having that focus is very good for me. But at the same time, it's not always great. And I do find that often it's better with a more higher level, general kind of goal and aim, and you don't have anything hugely specific, because I think naturally, well, sweeping statement, there's a fear of failure. And what if you don't make it? And then you don't want to have to deal with that. So there's a protection mechanism in there, I think, when we, for some people, when they set goals of going, actually, it'll be better if I just have this sort of higher aim with the rather than a specific thing. Because if I don't make it, that's okay. But I do think there is a value in having some form of target, goals, aims. And look, that might not be, I get, for some people and in the jobs they're doing or the sport they're doing, it is a time, it is a distance, it is something like that. Or it is more broader of, I just want to get that performance out of me that I know is in there, whatever that looks like and whatever that is going to be on the day, and giving like 100% effort. So yeah, it's funny. I flip because I am the engineer and I have that logical brain, and I kind of like the black and white and I don't like the blur. But at the same time, and there's a self-preservation or a protection in there that maybe, or maybe a lack of confidence that doesn't, it doesn't give you the confidence to say it outright or to be so bold and brash and, yeah.
And I think
cocky,
that,
or, whatever, I don't know what you want to call it, yeah, how it can be perceived, yeah.
And I suppose that flexibility is actually quite important in all of it, because we so often talk about how different approaches work for different people based on your mindset and how you think, but that probably works for the individual too.
Yeah.
On any given day, any given week.
I also think as well, and again, I seem to be doing a lot of cliches, like that moment, that goal, whatever it is for the person, often lasts a split second. That achieving that or not achieving it is such a short space of time, and yet the progress to get there has taken years, or might have taken, you know, it might have been what they've been working towards for so long. Why aren't we enjoying that bit? That's the bit that takes up the majority of our life. And yet that ticking the box or that achieving the goal is such a short amount. I'm not saying we shouldn't have it, because that's what drives us forward, but it's just remembering that 99% of our time is working towards that. And that drive and that achievement. And that's the bit we should really remember, relish, enjoy, over than getting too fixated on that, achieving that, what that goal is.
And In the intro to this, I'll have listed out your achievements in triathlon so far. And I so often ask people again, what are your career highlights or what are your, you know, athlete highlights in terms of results, things like that. Because I expect the results to come in, like I won this championship or whatever. And I suppose in your case, if I was up to ask that question now, that those highlights for you, yes, they're great, the title wins, those types of things, but I suppose you look back on that journey to certain parts of that as well and actually think that was pretty special too.
Yeah, and again, as athletes, it's really hard for us to do that because you're constantly on to the next thing. Like, you often don't value the wins or the results as much because you're always like, but how can I be better and what's next? And so, you know, even now it's really hard to like look back over the last 10 years and be like, actually, you need to be really proud of what you've achieved. And, you know, when I turned professional, I didn't know I'd be winning any races, let alone a full Ironman race, let alone, you know, four Ironmans and two full distances. I would say, like, you know, yes, I've had those wins, but I'm not an athlete that is. I've probably had the most number of second places of any athlete in the world. I think that's probably where my gold medal is, in the number of second places. So it does mean that when you do win, because I'm not doing it regularly, like it means so much more, I think. Like, it does, you don't take it for granted. So if I did look at career highlights, like, I can talk you through every one of those wins and how special they were to me, and I wouldn't be able to necessarily pick anyone over the other in terms of a highlight. But then I would also say, off the back of that, and this is probably where it flips back a little bit more to the journey, like finishing top 10 at the Ironman World Championships in St. George at the beginning of 2022, which was kind of the COVID delay, and then backing it up and getting top 10 at the Ironman World Championships in Kona in October. Like, they weren't wins, but they weren't wins as in I wasn't the first across the line, but they were wins for me because I probably never thought I would ever be capable of getting those top 10s, and especially two in the same year. And that's, I mean, a lot of that, again, like I've mentioned it, like, is my coach and her belief in me and what we've achieved together and what she's been able to get out of me over the last couple of years of working together. So I would say, you know, yes, those wins are always going to be career highlights, and the first win is very special. Backing it up when you go back as defending champion, then like the three-peat that I managed to do, and the third one was really rough going into it and had a lot of issues. And then, and that was in Australia, which, you know, I started the sport, so that's got all memories. And then spent a lot of time in New Zealand, so that win's very special. And, you know, I can say all of those, but then the bigger piece is all those years of hard work, and then being able to do two top 10s at world championships, at a later age in life, I kind of thing. And yeah, they weren't the podium, but they were wins for me. And that's kind of got to be, that's probably one of the biggest years.
Your relationship with your coach, Julie, as well, sounds like it's a key part in where you are at the moment, because what was it, 2019, I think?
Yeah.
You started working with her.
Yeah.
And, okay, can you kind of talk us through that relationship? Because hearing you talk about her, it sounds really important, and just to have her belief in you too.
Yeah.
And knowing that she's in your corner.
Yeah, I think, again, I wish I had a great relationship with my previous coach, and they got me to where I was, like, taking me from an amateur professional. We left on amicable terms. It was just kind of the right decision. I do wish I'd have come to Julie a few years earlier, in just of what her style and what she's been able to get out of me and that relationship. It's funny because we're both British and we're both awkwardly British, so we hate kind of those, you know, openly talking about things as such. But She's got an incredible history of her being an elite athlete herself and results, but also feel her career to some extent was cut short through the injuries she had to manage over time. So she's had these incredible highs, but also been through these lows, and then has just found this ability as a coach to is incredibly caring, is incredibly invested in the individual athlete and getting the best out of them, can see what they need and what's good for their group. And then just, I guess, yeah, like, so we started at the end of 2019 and then obviously went into COVID. So then everyone's in lockdown and, you know, and I, at that time I just had a broken collarbone. So I was coming back from that. And I'm not sure I would have got through still being an athlete through COVID and with sort of coming back from a collarbone if it hadn't been for Julie. And I can definitely say after that being hit in May in the race, like her support. And, you know, there's a few other people around as a team. So, but her support over this past year with what I've been going through, like, yeah, I don't know where I would be, or I certainly wouldn't, you know, we wouldn't have got back to Kona and wouldn't have gone on from there if it hadn't have been for her, yeah, her support, her as a coach, as a friend, but just that, you know, caring, wanting the best, knowing when to step up, when to step back. And it's really hard as well, I think, as with a coach and athlete, especially, you know, we're not that far in age difference either. In fact, one of my first races as a pro was one of her last races. So it kind of crossed that. And then, you know, I do see her as a friend as well, but then that's a very fine line, because to deliver her best as a coach, she's got to have boundaries in terms of the coach-athlete relationship. And so that, I think, is hard sometimes for her as a coach or for me, because you kind of want to do things on a social side, but ultimately the relationship is coach-athlete. And to get for her to be the best coach and to get the best out of you as an athlete, it's got to be that way. And so that can be tricky and can be challenging at times, but I think as long as you both respect that, and I would say that in any relationship, it's the communication piece, and it's just being open and honest with each other and keeping that dialogue going. She's been, sounds silly, and I can't say enough of how much support and help she's been over the last, yeah, at least the last 12 months, but yeah.
And so often is said, the people around you are often the biggest helps, the biggest source of inspiration, the biggest support, yeah, whenever you go through something difficult and challenging.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think, yeah, like I say, yes, there's boundaries, but to have someone in your corner as not just a coach, but to a friend with all itself, I think can have a lot of great benefits. And it certainly sounds, yeah, like you've got that. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the Women's Sports Trust as well.
Yep.
And if memory serves me right, I think we briefly met at their 10th birthday,
yes,
celebration, yeah, which, was that 2022? Probably.
It was. I'd just come back from Kona and I was so excited because, I've been a huge supporter of the Women's Sports Trust from day dot, but again, with always being overseas, like all my connections back, you know, it's back into the UK and I'm very passionate about the sport, but I always feel a little bit detached. And so I was so excited when they were having that celebration and I could actually work it out that I was flying back from the US and I could get to be there in person and meet people in face to face. Yeah.
Yeah, and likewise, having essentially worked from my front room for the last 2 years, it was really nice to actually get to go to something with real, yeah, people who you could actually talk to. rather than doing everything virtually or through a screen, which I think it had been pretty much up until that point. And I think you're on the Unlocked program for 2022 as well, and you've been working as an athlete ambassador as well for the Women's Sports Trust, an organization we've obviously shouted about quite a lot on this show, and we are have racked up a large number of Unlocked members, the guests too. But I suppose the first point I was going to ask is, we've obviously talked a lot about the triathlon part of your life, but is it quite nice to have this other area of your life that I suppose is a part of your identity that is away from the like strict competing and the strict training side of your life, where you feel like you can give back to, as we talked about right at the start, trying to make opportunities, diversity within sport, women's sport in particular, in this case, just better for the next generation and going forwards?
Yeah, for sure. I've always, like, again, just the opportunities that sport has given me, and to be where I am today, like, is due to sport. And I just want to make sure that others have the door open to their own opportunities. Again, you don't need to be a professional, you don't need to be winning that gold medal, but just the skills and the experiences you gain from sport is something I'm passionate about, and to see other people have access to that. And then I think, specifically then on the women's side of the sport, yes, I'm one of four girls, but then everything else I've done through life has been fairly, in the military, you're in the minority as a female. I was an engineer, that's the minority. And then in sport, and just then opening your eyes up to the differences, the inequalities, and how great women's sport is, and that we need to tell these stories. And it goes back to, again, like, you can't be what you can't see. And I think it does come back to, maybe it is from having the corporate career first and then coming into the sport and feeling, like, a lot of, to be the best in your sport, you have to be selfish. But then maybe that's, I'm not quite selfish enough to drive to that place. And so that I want to do more of the, and maybe it's the team sport background as well, of going, I want to leave it in a better place when I finish. And the work through the Women's Sports Trust of being able to just have access to Tammy and Claire and Susie, and the amazing leadership that they have, but also then the other athletes who were from a whole range of sports, like minority sports, mainstream sports, at different points in their careers, having access then to the experts that they came in. And just as a collective, like, how can we work together to make this better? And, off the back of being involved in the Women's Sports Trust, I was, or hand in hand to some extent, I was voted onto the athlete board of the Professional Triathletes Organization. And I am incredibly driven to work for the athletes to make the sport better. And probably through some of the struggles I've had over the years, like, how do we get professional athletes to get insurance for medical, for travel, for, and how do they do their finances and taxes as a professional athlete? How do we get them help and support in that area? How do they develop themselves as a business, as a brand? Can we get them better support for mental health, physical health? Can we help them with that career transition, like, and that forward planning of, what is it that you're going to do afterwards, and how do you manage that identity piece of who are you when your sporting career finishes, and what is that next bit? So that's, for me, is all, and I think that does help. I guess that gives me what I hope makes me feel valuable or useful or not worthless, I would say. And the Women's Sports Trust has been a huge part of that, in just, a collective voice of hearing what others are going through and how they manage things, and the different issues different sports are having to deal with. But not just the negative, there's lots of positives as well in terms of the work that's being done and how can we raise the profile of women's sport and tell the stories and get more people. Because it's not just, you know, people say, oh, people don't watch it. It's like, well, it's never been shown. So of course they don't watch it. Like if it was on, you know, if it was on TV as much as men's sport had been on, then I think that might be a different conversation. And also that's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take time to build that up because we just are inbuilt in subconsciously. It's just been brought up that it's the men's sport that's on TV and that's what we see. And so, yeah, we're not watching women's sport because it's never been shown. It's not on prime time all the time. So, yeah, it's been an incredible, it is an incredible group to be part of. I think deep down as well, we all want a sense of belonging and community and being part of something. And that's for me has been a big part of it as well, particularly being overseas and on my own a lot of the time. And I think hopefully like there's some great work being done by the organization, but by those athletes. And I think that hopefully spins off to other areas. And it's certainly helped me start to kind of go, okay, what is it that I do want to achieve through sport?
Yeah. And I remember the energy in that room that night. It was just probably one of the most positive, just throughout everybody you talk to, one of the most positive evenings you could hope to enjoy, because everyone's just in that same place, in that same frame of mind, for you just looking at something like women's sport and just seeing the potential of what it can be. And you mentioned, say, netball earlier on in this show as well, and taking that as a prime example. Obviously, there's the football side of things as well. Like this year, obviously, I work specifically in F1 now, whereas I didn't before, but just see what F1 Academy could be this year. That I'm really excited for that and just showcasing it. And obviously, I look at it from a very coverage-centric mindset. But to have that coverage now, you just think where it could go from there. I don't know if there's anything you've found particularly eye-opening or something that maybe surprised you in your capacity with the Women's Sports Trust at the moment, or if there's anything that you really single out as something that perhaps is the next hurdle to cracking. Obviously, it's different from sport to sport, but to take that next big step, if you like, going forwards.
Yeah, gosh. I mean, we've made incredible steps forward in women's sport, but I still think there is a long way to go. So it's kind of not taking the foot off the gas, not being complacent, not allowing media or brands to think, oh, well, they are getting coverage now, so that's okay. Like, let's not be, we can be grateful, but not accepting that that's okay, if that makes sense. Like, we can be, really happy for the progress we've made, but not accepting that that's the limit and there's still more to go. You know, from I see, the women's, you know, England women's football, the Lionesses, has done incredible work in creating better momentum, better coverage, better media for women's sport. The England rugby team as well, I'd say the Roses, the netball, the hockey, all of those teams. I think there's huge strides being taken and those athletes are getting closer to the recognition that they deserve, the value that they are. I think there's still a huge gap to those smaller sports and those individual sports that and that's almost getting wider now because brands are jumping on board, and it is great with the big team sports and the value there and those athletes. But then, you know, if I look at, you know, triathlon as well, and especially in the longer distance triathlon, so not the Olympic sport or the Olympic distance that's at the Olympics, we've got a couple of race series that are new coming in this year. There's a lot more money being pumped into prize money, which is fantastic. And hopefully this is going to lead to the top athletes being household names. That's going to bring in more sponsorship and everything. And in theory, that trickles down. to more athletes then being able to make it. But at the same time, like, there's less sponsorship deals being done, there's less money coming in from brands, it's harder to make a living. And there seems to be this focus on, if you're the top one or two athletes, you're going to be fine. But then the gap to everyone else being able to survive is getting bigger. And it feels like brands are going, well, we're actually going to go all in, but we're going to go all in on one or two athletes and no one else. And it feels a little bit the same, like we're going all in on the football. And I want to say, I think it's a million amazing, and they do definitely deserve it for sure. But we've not got to forget about those other sports that we still need to bring up. And those, where's the pipeline of athlete development if it's, yeah, we're just going to throw everything at this top athlete and forget about everyone else. Like, they're the next generation. How are we creating that pipeline, and how are we supporting them to then develop into future stars? Yeah.
And if you take football as an example, obviously we domestically anyway, you see so much about the WSL, but you just go one tier below to the Championship. Yeah. And the situation is obviously a little bit different.
Yeah.
In terms of support and coverage and everything in that area. Do you kind of, we touched on the purpose question before and what your purpose is now. And I suppose going forwards, regardless of what you do personally in triathlon or sport, is this almost like your long-term forever purpose, so to speak? Just trying to keep driving that change, I suppose, for the better?
I think so. I think that's where I don't know how to make it into something viable. That's my struggle at the moment. Like, how do you turn that into something that, yeah, I don't know, is kind of that next step. Like, but that's where I think that's where I get fired up about. That's where, yeah, my energy is. That's where, yeah, you get the, I don't know, it's the whole mix of emotions. It's the frustration and things, but it's also that elation and what could be, and the incredible athletes. And I think just, you know, sport has given me so many opportunities. I want others to have that. And you can only do that if you can see it. Like, and if you have role models, and if you have someone you can look up to, or you can see the pathway through to that journey. And again, that's not necessarily about the elite level and bringing on the next generation of future England players, I mean, America, US players, Olympic stars. That's also around creating that visibility of, yeah, getting people who didn't think they were any good at school, at sport, but getting them off the couch in later years of life. It's challenging the perception. I think we're always going to have to navigate it. Like, what is the role of the female as a mum, main child, stereotypically, still does all the, predominantly looks after the kids. Like, but where is that balance between them wanting to be play sport, whether it is just for fitness, mental health, or if it is that they want to have a bigger career? How do we balance that? Is that just something we are always going to have to accept, that it might not be quite equal for women and male because of our natural bodies, in terms of the women are the ones that are going to have the babies, sort of thing. But yeah, I think just, yeah, trying to leave it in a better place. And I'd like to think that it's for the better of the sport as a whole. And when I say that, I mean that it's not just my individual view of what I think is better and what I think is needed or what I didn't get. I'd like to think I'm engaging enough to understand the views of the sport and the main issues in triathlon, in women's sport broader, to be able to go, yeah, this is what we need going forward, and this is where I'd like to, yeah, like to help and push.
Mm-hmm. And I think I had the conversation with Beth Gill on this show before about the little one percenters, the 1% actions, the 1% decisions
that you add them together and they can make something or make significant change for the better. And just by having those conversations, actively putting that in front of people's eyes and minds, they do make a difference in the long run. Yeah. So it might take time, but it's ultimately stuff that's needed. My final question for you, obviously, like I mentioned, start of 2024, how does your year kind of look, or whether what your plans are in the short term? You mentioned you're kind of at the end of, or approaching the end of a training block at the moment.
Yeah, my plans and goals at the moment are literally surviving day to day and training session to training session. I can't think too much far ahead. No, I am. So like I said, I'm going back to New Zealand. So I actually go next week. I've got a couple of races down there. I'm super excited to get down there. I haven't been back since pre-pandemic. I'm kind of waiting to see how those races go as to what I choose to do in the rest of the year. As I said, there's a couple of new race series coming in, which is one made it super exciting, made those sort of good choices. I'm also one that kind of, I like cool races in exciting places and slightly different. I don't tend to follow the norm, which if you take it from a business decision, isn't necessarily the best thing to do, but from a life decision, you choose the races that you like. So Challenge Roth in July is a race I've done for the last 7-8 years, and it's a favorite of mine, so that's kind of definitely on the radar again. The back half of the year is pretty open and pretty flexible. I think just from, you know, like I said, the crash in May, we had the focus to get back for Kona in October, and I kind of did an off-road adventure iron distance race in Patagonia in December. But the plan was kind of to like try and push through to Ironman New Zealand, which is beginning of March, and then sort of take a step back. So yeah, that's kind of, yeah, I haven't got the full year planned out yet. There's lots of options, which is exciting. And yeah, I don't know where quite that will take me yet.
Like you say, exciting options, and you know what's right when you get there.
Yeah,
ultimately.
Exactly. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Laura, for coming on to the show. That's probably one of our deeper chats we've had.
sorry about that. Probably got me. I don't know whether that's like where I am in training, where I am in life at the moment.
Yeah. I'm all on board with a deeper chat, because I mean, how often do we take time to properly self-reflect like that? And I think so often when you hear it from others, it can force a lot of other people to kind of look inward a lot of the time. And I think while it can be a difficult practice and a challenging practice at times, it's probably quite a healthy one to consider that every now and again. And as I mentioned, Women's Sports Trust is something we're hugely passionate about here. So all of the work in the area, all of the work that organisation does to try and push women's sport into a better place for women in the future, people in the future, we will always back that. So huge kudos as well for all the work you're doing on that side. And finish off by saying, I hope 2024 goes really well. Enjoy going back to New Zealand, and whatever your year pans out and how it pans out, how it looks, hope it is as successful as you want it to be.
Well, thank you. I mean, thank you also, like, thank you for the opportunity to just come on chat. And I think, like you said, taking a bit of a deeper dive is sometimes good, and can be good kind of reflection time, and makes you individually reassess sort of those priorities. But other than that, I've really, really enjoyed chatting to you. So thank you very much.
A huge thanks to Laura for taking the time to chat with us on the podcast. As I mentioned, there was some deep conversation in there, but often that can give you so much when you take time to really reflect in that way. That is almost it for this episode, everyone. If you liked what you heard, then you can follow us on social media. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok, and all of our handles are at SportSpielPod. And you can see all of our episodes on our website, that is sportspielonline.com. That is us at the halfway stage of our 2024 series. So we're taking a brief pause for a couple of weeks, partly because of our work schedules, before we bring you the second half of this series. Keep your eyes peeled on social for our latest updates, and you will be hearing from us very soon. Until then, take care everyone, and goodbye.